From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made last Wednesday at the Rochester Institute of Technology, when an RIT alumnus made the largest donation in the school's history. Austin McCord gave $50 million to RIT. He's the founder of a technology company called Datto, which helps small companies back up their data and computer systems. And while McCord's business innovations and his gift have made headlines, there's another thing to note: his age. McCord is only 32 years old, so he's a millennial. Let's face it, sometimes millennials get a bad rap. Some say they're selfish, entitled, or apathetic. In a recent New Yorker piece, writer Gia Tolentino describes how the image of this generation has been connected with what she calls the notion of disruptive self-interest. In a rather cheeky opening to her piece, she says that alien researchers of the future might view a millennial as, quote, a twitchy and phone-addicted pest who eats away at beloved American institutions the way the boll weevils feed on crops, end quote. Now, again, that's meant to be cheeky, but comments like that strike a chord. Many people strongly argue that the negative reputation millennials have for being selfish is unfair and untrue. They point to the generosity of the Austin McCords of the world, or the millions of millennials who volunteer for causes and organizations. In fact, in 2015, the Associated Press reported that millennials are more committed to volunteering than were young Americans a generation ago. So this hour, we're talking about millennials and philanthropy and how this generation is changing the face of giving, whether it's through money, time, or more. To members of Generation Y, giving is more than writing a check. It's engagement and making a social impact. I'd like to welcome my guest for the hour. Andrew Brady is the president of the Rochester Young Professionals and president of the Accelerate team. Welcome back to you.
Thanks for having me.
Carolyn Butler is the senior associate director of Leadership Annual Giving at the University of Rochester. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
Jonathan Hoos is a philanthropic advisor for the Rochester Area Community Foundation. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Megan.
And Sean O'Brien is the vice chairman of the board for Cure Childhood Cancer Association. Welcome to you, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
And in the interest of full disclaimer, Sean and I are on that board together, so we've known each other before. Listeners, I'd like to invite you to call the program and share your thoughts on millennials and philanthropy. Maybe you agree with what was stated in that New Yorker piece, what aliens might think of this generation. Or maybe you're a millennial and you give and you're philanthropic and you want to help dispel those rumors, those stereotypes. You can call the program at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can also email the program at connections@wxxi.org. Or you can find me on Twitter at mmacmedia. So I'd like to start by asking each of our guests just to share their thoughts on some of those negative stereotypes that people have of millennials. Caroline, I'll start with you.
Sounds good. I think there's just been a transition in what has between millennial giving and former generations, and the fact that millennials really want to focus on what is most important to them and see that immediate impact. Whereas in the past, when it comes to higher education, it was okay to just give to the university, and a lot of the older generations felt that the university would do with it what was best for the university. So I definitely think that there's been a shift, and no means is that negative. It's just making us become much more donor-centric and figure out what is best for the donor and what is of most interest to them.
So in terms of that reputation, maybe do the people that you work with, who I'm assuming you're on the younger end of the staff spectrum there,
yes.
Is that negative stereotype true? Do people in your institution, or do you think the community at large, the wider community outside of Rochester, thinks that millennials are selfish and apathetic and entitled? Do you feel like you're working an uphill battle sometimes?
Sometimes, yes, but I am constantly surprised by meeting with, so I work with alumni who are 0 to 15 years out, and it is amazing to hear that they had such an amazing experience. They just want to help make a difference in a way that was important to them, whether it's giving to their major, their student group, a different affinity, if it's local to the Rochester community, the medical center, because everyone is impacted somehow by U of R at this point in time. Yes, they do want to see the immediate impact and kind of see what their investment is in the best way that they can go about it. But it is amazing that they just want to make a difference at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, how about you? You're working with a lot of people, I assume, and do you work with a lot of millennials in your role?
Yes, I do. So I'm the staff liaison and a member of Next Gen Rochester at the Community Foundation. And so I get to see a lot of great examples of, you know, millennials and younger donors supporting great causes in the community. So for me, I hear that stereotype, and I think it does a huge disservice, not only to the millennial generation, but every generation. It really downplays a lot of the important work that is being done by millennials, not only through nonprofit work, but also for for-profit businesses. Mm-hmm.
You've been doing some reading, I know, recently.
Yes.
On how the giving has shifted, and you sent some thoughts earlier. What has the biggest shift in the trend been for you that you've noticed?
Well, I think there are a number of shifts. You know, talking about impact, that's a huge one. There's a book called Generation Impact, which is about next-gen philanthropy, and that just came out recently. And really seeing, you know, more systemic change to a lot of those entrenched problems that we have in our community. I think poverty is a great example of that in Rochester. But that's not just a millennial issue that millennials want to see change. It's also, you know, there's the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative. So that's across generations.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to note that not everyone is an Austin McCord. Not everyone has $50
yes.
million dollars to
yeah.
give to their former place of learning. And that's fine, because there are a lot of opportunities to volunteer time or expertise. And Andrew, I know that you work with a lot of people through the Rochester Young Professionals who are looking for volunteer opportunities.
Yeah, so one thing I'll give a shout out to Jonathan and NextGen Rochester is a, you know, young professional giving circle at the Community Foundation. And, you know, that's, to your point, not everybody can give, you know, $50 million and feel like they're going to have this tremendous outsized impact. But the young professional giving circle at NextGen, we can pool $50, $100, and then a group of us young professionals get to decide where these grants go. And they're smallish grants, but when you pull it together, certainly feel like you're having a little bit more of an impact. But then with Rochester Young Professionals and with the Rock City Coalition, there's actually a lot of people who, you know, young people who want to get involved, and maybe they don't have the extra resources financially to give, but they do want to get involved with volunteering. Or, you know, there's all this kind of you did a show last week on fair trade and direct trade, right? So a lot of people want to, you know, vote with their dollars a little bit in terms of what kind of businesses they're supporting, if they are values aligned, and if they are sustainable, and if they treat their employees well. And so I think that's another way that, you know, if I'm going to be spending that money anyway, why not do a little bit of extra research and find out if I'm supporting a company that, you know, is values aligned with me.
That's such a good point, because, again, if you don't have a lot of extra dollars and if you don't have time to be volunteering, that's a great way to give back in a way that's easy. You have to go to the store anyway to buy groceries for the week. Why not go to a place that supports fair direct trade? That's a great point. And I want to talk a little bit more about that giving circle, because I think, and maybe this is me generalizing, but when people hear about giving circles, the giving circle I know of is the George Eastman Circle at U of R, and that's big donors making big contributions. But the giving circle that you're referring to are smaller contributions that are manageable for a number of people who may usually be excluded from certain types of philanthropy. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, so the buy-in actually is $100 for a young professional. It's you know, much more reasonable, and we actually have a donor right now who's given a half a dozen to matching grants, so you can get in for $50. And literally, we go around about every month and learn a little bit about organizations around town, and then we have an annual meeting, an annual showcase, where there's a whole grants process. We get it down to about 8 or 10 organizations who present some kind of grant that they'd like to see us fund, and the members actually vote where they'd like their money to go. And so it's one of my favorite days of the year, because you go hear about these smaller organizations and the impact that you can make and these passionate people around Rochester that you may never have had a chance to hear before.
Yeah, and I think just to add on to what Andrew said, and thank you for all of that, NextGen Rochester really offers a way for, you know, young professionals and young philanthropists to come together and see their dollars stretch a lot more with giving to the community and giving to great organizations that are doing wonderful work in our community. And it also really puts the emphasis on the fact that the Community Foundation exists for the community. And this is just a wonderful entry point for young professionals and younger donors.
Another trend that I read about is that millennials are more likely to get involved with a cause or an organization if their peers are excited about that cause. So they're not as likely to donate through their company like maybe their parents had in the past, but something like a giving circle where maybe their friends or their coworkers are part of that and they have more of a voice and a say.
Go ahead. And just to go off of that, and what Andrew talked about in regards to the grant making, I mean, that's a really unique and amazing model where we, you know, the power of making those grants is in the hands of the NextGen members. And they get to review the grants, read them over. They can contact the nonprofits that are applying for funding and ask questions. The level of involvement is really pretty spectacular.
And that's something that you work with at CURE, Sean. A lot of engagement at CURE, and you're working from the ground up. And I know that you're trying to set up a Young Professionals Committee. Tell us a little bit about that and the goals behind that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, kind of what, you know, Andrew has talked about and, you know, what we're kind of hearing here is with the millennials, it's with all the information that is available to everyone, our parents' generation, they might have given to American Red Cross or something like that through a payroll deduction, where now we have the information and some people are like, okay, well, if I donate a dollar, 80% goes somewhere else that you may not have intended. So I think that the millennials are doing the research, and CURE is a Rochester-based organization that helps, you know, parents with children who have been diagnosed with cancer and chronic blood disorder. And, you know, what we're trying to do for CURE is build a young professional network, because there are so many millennials that, you know, right now, whether they're bogged down by student loan debt, they're trying to find other ways to give back to their community. And one of it is volunteering. And there's no, we take all the volunteers we can get. And the millennials have been very generous with their time.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some numbers. So this is data that's proving that some of the stigma against millennials and being selfish are untrue. This is according to Blackbaud, a philanthropy technology organization. They compiled a report that said millennials accounted for 11% of annual individual donations, or $481, to various causes, compared to 43% and $1,212 given by baby boomers. So the percentage is smaller right now, but it's inching its way up. And there are studies out there that show how much that gap is becoming smaller over the years. Gen Y donors are more likely than other generations to plan to increase both the amount they will give and the number of charities they expect to support. They're much more likely to give online and to demand accountability and transparency. So as you were saying, Jonathan, I don't want to call millennials skeptical, but they're researching more. They're not just giving without, you know, they're not just taking something from a payroll deduction without doing their research and thinking about causes. Is that something that any of you have talked to others about in your work?
I would say that, you know, one of the things, you know, for the CURE organization is, you know, we're very critical as how much of money gets donated, gets sent back. And the reason why that's important to us is because we know that's also important to millennials. And millennials are just, they're future donors. You know, whether they donate their time now and money later, it's amazing to see. You know, I think now we're in a time period more with social awareness and, you know, social media that a lot of the millennials, they want to make, what's more important to them is work life, more so than the previous generations, where it was, okay, we do 9 to 5 and we provide for the family, and maybe it's 9 to 6, 9 to 7, where, you know, millennials in that workforce, they want to make sure that, you know, they're putting in their hours, but they're also doing right by the community, and they want to see those dollars go to the community. And to Jonathan's point, they want to get that satisfaction of knowing that it was a direct contribution, and the be able to see the impact rather than being thrown in a large organization where you might not know where the funds are going or who it's helping.
Mm-hmm. The Millennial Impact Report of 2016 said slightly over half of millennials, so 52%, made a donation to a cause affiliated with a social issue in the past month, and that was in 2016. So that's to your point, Sean. And then that report also said 46% of millennials volunteered for a cause affiliated with a social issue that they cared about in that past month, and that number is up from previous years. So it's the positive impact that seems to be the common thread across everything here. And Jonathan, I know that you were reading a lot about ROI and mm-hmm. how some millennials are reaching outside of the U.S. sometimes because they feel like that ROI is greater in other places.
Yeah, so you can find a lot of that with some of the larger name donors, Mark Zuckerbergs and individuals like that who are seeing a return on investment for their giving to be larger in other countries. You know, a dollar can go a much longer way in, you know, certain places in Africa than it can in the United States. But I think, you know, local giving is really important. I think it builds a sense of community engagement that doesn't exist as much anymore, unfortunately. And I see a lot of millennials craving that. And I can only speak for myself and wanting to be involved and wanting to see, you know, more of those positive changes and really see. I mean, we hear about the same issues like every year. And it's just like we want to see, you know, real change. And I think that's happening. Like, look at downtown with all the investment and all the everything that's happening with Main Street and around there. There's really a movement in Rochester.
What are some of those issues that you spoke about specifically? What do you think people are focusing on?
I think poverty is a big one. I think the wages that have been stagnated since, the 70s? I mean, these are just real big, real entrenched issues. Transportation issues are huge. I mean, you know, RTS is working on improving their bus route, but that's, you know. And, yeah, seeing a lot of the, you know, we want to retain people in Rochester and retain young people in Rochester.
Mm-hmm. So addressing systemic issues, so yeah. Getting to the root of problems, trying to find ways to make an impact in that way. Caroline, do you find that in any of your work at U of R, that millennials that you're reaching out to want to get involved with the university in some way, but they're asking for more? They just don't want to write a check. They want to address some of those root issues that the university is very involved in.
Mm-hmm. So we recently have been very much focused on this balance between engagement and philanthropy and focusing on engaging our alumni and community members in ways outside of just writing a check. So whether it's attending events, volunteering their time, which is what everyone's really been talking about, in a way that is important to them, as well as just connecting with us, whether it's via social media, one-on-one visit. We're just really focusing on that holistic approach because it is so important, because we're looking for that longevity. We're looking for the lifelong relationship, which doesn't necessarily come with just writing a check. They want to be much more involved.
Mm-hmm. I read about an organization called Resource Generation that some of you may be familiar with. And it's a nonprofit, almost 20 years old, that works with wealthy people, wealthy millennials, who have trust funds, who have an extreme amount of resources that some of them have stated that they feel guilty about and they want to give back to the community. But as you said, they don't just want to write a check. So this organization encourages them to donate to different causes and decrease the divide between the haves and haves not. So it says that it's the only organization in the U.S. helping young folks confront and unpack class privilege and get organized about redistribution, not charity. And one of the examples they give are they ask the question, why are people food insecure? Are they not making enough money? Do they not have enough access to benefits? So you could support community groups that are fighting for an increase in the minimum wage, as you said, Jonathan, and that can help with food insecurity. So we're seeing more and more of these organizations pop up, and I think, well, I assume, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, it's because millennials feel so strongly about supporting causes and addressing systemic problems. Andrew, do you find that you're talking to a lot of people about that at the Young Professionals?
Yeah, I think that in terms of how you're giving, or I would really encourage people, whether or not, even if they are one of those folks that has plenty of money to give, that is in that position, I think it's really important to balance that with some more of the boots on the ground kind of giving back as well. Just being able to see where your dollars are going, and I think in a lot of cases for a young professional, there's opportunities where we're even more effective volunteers, right? Like if you're working with young people, it might be easier for you to connect with a young student. I volunteered before with Junior Achievement. You know, you teach business and entrepreneurship to young city school district kids, or you go and you know, be a big brother or a big sister, and you're able to connect it at a different level than someone. Not that I'm sure both of those organizations love, you know, the retired folks or people later on in their career, but I think there is, when you're a little bit closer to the population you're trying to serve, there's a real opportunity to connect with them.
Mm-hmm. Sean, do you find that that's true as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've kind of touched up upon this point, but you know, it's just that matter and that sense of community, and we need to be the change, and we are the next generation, and the generations before us have kind of set the framework, but at this point, we're kind of driving, we're the driving force, and if we want to, you know, contribute and do things and make those changes. We do the research. We have the information available. And to Andrew's point, and I think Jonathan's and Carolyn's, is just having everybody involved and getting them involved early so that those are, you know, we essentially view those as partners and will be the driving force for the years to come.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, you can join this conversation by calling 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI. That's 263-9994. You can also email the program at WXXIConnections@WXXI.org. Or you can find me on Twitter at MMACMedia. And I have to say, the feedback on Twitter has blown up since last night when we first started talking about this show. And we'll get to your comments in just a few minutes. I also have an email here from a local woman who started an organization to remember her brother. So different ways of giving back. And we want to hear from you. So give us a call. Send us an email. We'll take our short break. And we will have more Connections next. Coming up in our second hour, we're talking about mystery items at the Memorial Art Gallery. The MAG has more than 600 temporary items that are waiting to be claimed. After years of analysis, the MAG staff doesn't know where they came from or who their true owners are, and that has legal implications. Can they be part of the MAG's collection? Maybe in the future, but maybe they belong to you. Tune in next hour for some detective work with the MAG. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, filling in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about millennials and philanthropy. And if you heard the first half of this conversation, we were talking about how giving is shifting to more engagement among millennials, wanting to see a social impact, a positive impact. And I have to say, there's a lot of pushback on this issue, a lot of pushback about some people do believe that the stereotype about millennials is true, and they believe that millennials is selfish. And we'll address that in just a moment. I have some thoughts on that, and I'm sure our guests do as well. But first, I'd just like to go around the table and ask our guests about the causes that they care about. Because if you're listening, we're in the holidays right now, and you're looking for an organization to support, whether it's financially or through volunteer work, we have some experts in the studio that can help connect you to their personal interests and also the organizations that they work for. So we'll start with you, Caroline. Caroline Butler from the University of Rochester. What causes do you support?
So my biggest cause that I support is the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America. I have Crohn's disease and my sister has ulcerative colitis, so it's extremely important to my family in focusing on helping fund new research, raising money to help find new medications, and that is really my big driver at this point in time. And then also supporting my alma mater. I am a U of R grad as well, so I volunteer with them and support both the college and the hospital as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Jonathan?
So I am a huge proponent of the Community Foundation, which is why I work there. And I specifically the Next Gen Giving Circle, as well as the LGBT Giving Circle. I'm also a big fan of and supporter of the Out Alliance, and I volunteer with them. I just volunteered a few weeks ago with their youth lock-in, so that was really fun. And then my alma mater, SUNY Geneseo.
Great. Andrew?
Yeah, I mentioned a couple of them. Junior Achievement is one of my favorites, and Big Brothers Big Sisters. I really like trying to get involved with students and kind of that next generation in Rochester. But then I think the business component in there as well. I saw a research from Harvard a while back that said that 51% of millennials no longer believe that capitalism is the best system for us to run our economy. And I think that it has great potential to be when it is more values driven in terms of fair trade or direct trade or B Corps or conscious capitalism, those sorts of things. And so there's organizations around town like the Coffee Connection, where they employ women who are recovering from addiction, or we were just talking about the New City Cafe that, you know, has a similar mission to kind of uplift their neighborhood. And so trying to support some of those businesses, because that's ultimately a sustainable way, the money that you give. Or, you know, Kiva has entrepreneurs where you can give some money and you get that money back and you can reloan it. So stretch your dollars even further that way.
Mm-hmm. Sean O'Brien from Cure Childhood Cancer Association.
So oddly enough, Cure Childhood Cancer Association. So I'm on the board for Cure Childhood Cancer, and it struck a chord for me. The executive director, Holly Dutcher, is extremely passionate, kind of got me on board with it. And then, you know, me having a 2.5-year-old, you know, I've been with the organization for a little bit over 3 or 4 years, but it's a Rochester-based not-for-profit organization solely focused on helping children who are diagnosed with cancer and chronic blood disorder. And the reason why it strikes for me is, you know, we do education, we have parent advocates, and we have people there who, when a parent's given the absolute worst news that they could possibly have, you know, we have somebody there to lean on. So that's why I'm passionate about that.
We have a lot of feedback on Twitter with millennials writing in about organizations and causes that they care about. This is from Sydney. She says, I'm able to support Utica College, Nazareth College, and Young Women's College Prep, where I also volunteer. I volunteer at the Women's Foundation of the Genesee Valley and also encourage friends and family to support and volunteer where they can. Flower City Philanthropy is a great resource for Rochester, too. I know a ton of folks in my age range that are super supportive of a number of great organizations in Rochester, both financially and through volunteer work. That's from Sydney. This is from Isabel. She says she's an older millennial, 32 years old. She volunteers for abortion rights causes and donates to abortion funds when she can. She says these organizations do vital work. And then Chris in Rochester says she served two AmeriCorps terms and those were related to addressing poverty. And she says, now I volunteer when I'm able. I wish I could donate funds to organizations, but I'm not able to do so. So time is what she donates. And that raises an important factor because not everyone has a lot of extra funds right now. And millennials in general, we talked about student loans earlier. Sean mentioned those. And Jonathan, I know that there are a lot of root issues here, mm-hmm. Both economically and financially with millennials that mm-hmm. may lead to some of the frustrations or the stigma of millennials being selfish, but there just isn't resources. There just aren't resources there sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that's why you'll see in a lot of writing about fundraising and philanthropy the mention of time, talent, and treasures. And so there are other ways to support the causes you care about and to be involved and to make a positive impact in your community. Through one of those three ways. It's not just about writing a check, as Carolyn said. So I think that's important. However, with student loans, I think that's a huge issue that is holding back a lot of millennials from being, you know, larger donors.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how we got here, though, how we got to these negative stereotypes and stigmas. We're living in a different time. We're growing up in a different time. And when I say we, I'm a millennial, so I fall into this category. but with Occupy Wall Street and all the chaos sometimes that's happening in government and in the economy, I read a blog post, which I should find, about how millennials got to this point. And a psychologist named Dr. Brenda, I have so many notes. There's so much to say about millennials. Well, once I find this, it was from Psychology Today. And, oh, here it is, Brenda Bauer in Psychology Today. She says, millennials want straightforwardness in what they understand to be an unstable world. Their socially responsible attitudes are both despite and because of a set of crises, most notably a recession set in motion by Wall Street that was deeper than any other since the Great Depression mm-hmm. that seriously damaged Americans' confidence in financial, banking, and governmental institutions. She also notes this generation came of age in a post-9/11 America, primarily at war. She mentions Edward Snowden's disclosure that America engaged in mass surveillance of its own citizens, and that has shaken young professionals' trust in government. And she also says the government and private sector's reluctance to take decisive action to curb climate change leaves many millennials frustrated with what they see as a problem mm-hmm. of epic proportion. So how do you all feel about that? What are your reactions, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, millennials have definitely come up in a different time frame than the generations that that were before us. And, you know, speaking on Jonathan's point about student loans, the recession, all those things, it doesn't mean that millennials are apathetic. It just means that their starting line after they have graduated college is a little bit further back. And so some of them are, you know, less apt to maybe move out, but that doesn't mean that their energy and their enthusiasm is diminished by that. It just means that they're going to channel it in different ways than potentially what has been in the past, and that's just pure donations. And, you know, quite honestly, I think that, you know, that's actually good because they're being a lot more passionate. You know, a lot of people think that, okay, if I give some money, then I'm good and I'm all set. But what if that person, you know, needs you to tutor them. Maybe that would be a little bit more important. So I think the importance on how you give has shifted a little bit, and I think that given the time frame and the time period that they've kind of come into has shifted, and so therefore there's been just a different approach to things.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn, when you're reaching out to recent graduates and they say, I would love to help, but I have student loans, I have student debt, do you offer alternatives? How do you work with students who are struggling with that issue?
Yep. So what I focus on is, again, like I mentioned earlier, this balance between engagement and philanthropy. There are other ways to get involved with the university or the medical center outside of just donating. And then another focus outside of that, besides just donating your time, is this focus on just participation and getting in the habit of giving. I feel like we make these larger gifts, especially in the university setting, much more well-known. Whereas one of my focuses is promoting, just getting the habit of giving, participating, making a $5 gift. We have a $5 campaign where we just encourage our youngest alumni to give up a cup of coffee a week or something to that effect, and just make a $5 gift to show that you believe in the mission of the university, show your investment in the future of the university. So we really work with them and being much more donor-centric and figuring out what works best for our youngest alumni. Because it's a completely different atmosphere than alumni who graduated 20, 30 years ago.
I have to say, sometimes I get mailing from my former university, and it's a one sheet, and it has a checkbox on it. You can donate $100, $250, $500. And there's no, here's what we're going to use it for, or here's how you can make a difference. Mm-hmm. It's just this sheet that says, mm-hmm. we want your money, send it in the envelope. And you know, not to be overly critical of this university, but I wish they could give me a little more. Tell me why it matters. Tell me what you're doing. Are you funding a scholarship? Then I'm more interested. But what are some of your frustrations when you're, I know you all work in philanthropy or you volunteer for philanthropic organizations, but what are some things that you think we need to shift away from that may be an old school model?
Blind giving, just like what you were talking about. You got to tell a story. You got to paint a story. You got to give an example of what the money's going towards, or else people aren't
But that must have worked in the past, right, for them to keep doing that?
I think a lot of maybe, preceding generations to ours did give to a lot of causes like that. They were like, oh, I've heard of the Red Cross. Oh, I've heard of the American Heart Association. I'll just give to them.
And this kind of goes into the fact of what is starting to work really well, something like crowdfunding, because it's a specific project. It shows exactly what it's going to help. Right now, we have a crowdfunding campaign to fund students who are coming from Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands who are going to spend a semester at the U of R, and we're fundraising to help them with medical costs, books, and that type of thing. They will be attending tuition-free, but we're hoping to help with some of those excess costs. But something like that has really resonated because it is project-based. It shows exactly what your money is going towards. So it's a little bit of a different mindset and atmosphere, and there's that understanding that something like $5, $10 can really go a long way.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of brings us back to the point, the core concept of moving away from just blind giving. I think it's very difficult for millennials, especially the ones that are burdened with those student loan debts, who are just trying to work those off, to all of a sudden give more money to their college, which, oh, by the way, last year is less expensive than this year, and the costs keep increasing, and there's new facilities, and it's like, well, where is this money going, and what do they need it for? Don't they get enough from tuition? So, a little bit more clarity, a little bit more background, just no longer the blind giving.
Mm-hmm. This is a tweet from Emily. She says, my biggest complaint regarding philanthropy is, and this is in capital letters, I hate when they send you endless mailings and swag afterwards to entice you to donate again. She says that happened with the National Park Service. She gave them $50 and received calendars, cards, return address labels, and more. She says, it feels like all my money instantly gets spent on getting me to spend more money. How do you all feel about that? Lots of nodding.
Oh, absolutely. And I think a lot of people see that stuff and they're like, is this what my money's going towards? I don't need another object in my house. I just want you to do good work. And, in the park, in the example of the Park Service, just save our parks.
What's a good way to demonstrate that the organization is doing good work?
So I think that's a really good, there are a lot of great organizations who are doing that. A lot of them do it with video. And they do it with pictures. Charity Water is a great example of that. They show the wells that have been dug for people who have donated to the organization. And I really hope that that's the direction we're moving in, with more videos. I mean, not everyone can like travel all over the world to see where their money's gone, but you can upload a video if you're the organization. I don't think that's asking too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that a lot of organizations, they'll while I certainly think that that's probably an egregious example, I'd encourage people to go check out. There's a TED Talk called "The Way We Think About Charity Is Dead Wrong," and it actually has you look a little bit at some of the administrative fees and things that you might think are, we just want to minimize. But this guy tells a great story of he was one of those administrative costs, kind of like a marketing arm for a big organization, and because of the administrative costs got higher, they ended up firing him, and then the organization raised just an astronomically low number the next year. So I think that it is important, while that may not be the mailers and the things might need to change for this generation in terms of how to engage them, I think it is something important to think about, is that these charities are competing for your dollars against where, a t-shirt you're going to buy or those sorts of things that have all kinds of ads and marketing dollars behind it. So just something to think about, and maybe that's part of what the philanthropies need to work on, is how to engage without wasting money on mailers and things that are going to get thrown in the trash. But, I think it requires a mindset shift from some of us as well in the way that we decide to give.
And we talked about return on investment. And I think that, Andrew, that's kind of what you're leading to is, there might be administrative costs, but I think everything's about balance. And I think what millennials want to see more often is transparency. Okay, if the administration cost is going to be XYZ, well, if the donations have been steadily increasing in proportion or in a very similar rate to the administrative cost, well, if we could get more dollars to that particular charity, even though we might have to spend a little bit more on administrative, maybe that works out. But I think that the transparency with how the dollars are being spent, how they're bringing it in, would go a long way.
Some of the criticism I've read of millennials and giving is about the need to be noticed when millennials are giving. Some critics will say they have to post something on social media so people see that I've done this great thing and I want credit for it. And some people argue they want to wear t-shirts that said I gave, or they want some kind of proof that they've done a good thing. Maybe they have to post something on Facebook or Twitter. Go ahead, Jonathan.
I think a lot of people post about what they've done and who they support. I mean, Andrew's a great example, just to encourage, and I don't want to speak for you, but to encourage other people to learn about those organizations and to hopefully support them as well, so that they can continue and expand the good work that they're doing in our community. I don't necessarily think it's about being like, oh, look, I did this great thing. Like, look at me. I think it's, in a lot of cases, if you really ask the people, it's about getting other people to learn about those organizations and to support them.
Well, you mentioned earlier how people are more likely to do things that their friends maybe have donated to or volunteer with their friends. And so if you can use a little bit of positive peer pressure, then I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I also think that even though maybe millennials are using social media or using those kinds of ways to broadcast, it's not really all that much different than giving your money to an organization that you get your name on the building, right? Like I think any generation, for better or worse, they want to be recognized for what they've done. And so our means of doing it might be different, but I think that in some cases it can encourage more giving. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I'm seeing the phone starting to ring, so we'll get to some of your calls and questions. Up first is Bonnie in Rochester. Hi, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. I think over a good number of years now, there's been a really large increase in not-for-profits of all kinds, and people are, going to those, either they're, working for them or helping with them. So that has provided more options. I do see, though, and there's some change recently, but I do see, one of the things I see is, though, that sometimes the focus on not-for-profits, because you get to play out what your issue is, which is understandable. On the other hand, though, for many years, and now too, really, that has meant that there's been much less political activism. And by that, I mean ongoing. I don't mean just elections, because these are hard issues. They're systematic issues. Capitalism and all this stuff has been existing for many, many years with problems. So I see that being an issue. And then I would also suggest that for people who can you know, or either it could be rentals or somebody who's, if you're thinking of buying a small home, is one of the things to think about. Instead of moving downtown, which a lot of us have had battles over who gets the money there, rather than moving downtown, think about either renting or if you can, I know money is an issue, if you want to buy a home, buy them in a neighborhood that doesn't have a lot of money. Buy them in neighborhoods or rent in neighborhoods and then join grassroots organizing in these communities, which has gotten stronger in the last few years. So that way you're really mixing with people and you're also dealing with issues that are very, very fundamental to these bigger systems changes.
So, well, thanks, Bonnie. Yeah, thanks so much for those thoughts. Let's start with the first point Bonnie made about a decrease in political activism. Some of you looked a little surprised when she made that comment, Jonathan.
Yeah. So I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, in regards to, I think a lot of people I know who are millennials have been politically active, but a lot of people are, you know, they're disenfranchised with the system that doesn't seem to be working. I will say that a lot, there are a number of nonprofit organizations that do a lot of great advocacy work. Two examples I can think of are the Children's Agenda and the Center for Disability Rights. And so I used to work at the Center for Disability Rights, and I know that they've done and continue to do a lot of direct action.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else have any reactions to Bonnie's call? How do you feel about her second comment about more grassroots work and moving into neighborhoods that are disenfranchised?
I think that can be a delicate line because you see a lot of gentrification happening in a lot of areas. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like this savior mindset, like, oh, I'll go in there and buy a house and then make the neighborhood better. And then you see rising, you know, rents, rising home prices, people getting priced out, people having to move from that area who've been there for generations. It's a delicate balance. I think you can get involved with organizations that serve those areas in a lot of ways. Without displacing the people who, you know, call that area home and have called it home for a long time.
There's an excellent piece in Open Mic Rock by my colleague Tiana Mignon about gentrification, so try to check that out on their website, Open Mic Rock. The phone continues to ring, and up next on the phone is Susan from Shortsville. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm not a millennial. I'm fairly ancient. but, you know, all that free stuff you get in the mail, I get a lot of calendars and cards. Who can use 9 million calendars? And I can't afford to donate to everyone, but I save those and donate those to places like the Veterans Hospital for those who maybe can't afford something as simple as that, and they get used, you know, so you can pass it on.
Great. That's a great idea. Thank you, Susan. Thanks for the call.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyone have any thoughts about what to do with all those extra mailers other than donating them? That's a great idea. I never considered that. I should have.
Well, I think it's just kind of going on to our point as far as, you know, the different approach and different ways that millennials give. And I think that's an excellent way to do it. You get, you know, 10 calendars, give 9 of them away to somebody who might not be able to afford them or people who need them.
Mm-hmm. Here's a message from Dan on Twitter. He says, as an organizer of half a dozen events and groups in Rochester who is a millennial, I've seen an increase in groups asking for more younger leadership. Rochester has also seen a ton of new events, all led by millennials as volunteers. And I know he wrote a comment on Facebook as well about that issue of needing more millennial leadership in certain organizations. Mm-hmm. Andrew, I know that's something that you've spoken about as well. Have you seen that in your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So just a little couple of weeks ago, RYP and the Rock City Coalition, and thanks to the United Way and the Community Foundation, were able to put on our second annual Board and Volunteering Expo. So, you know, looking for young professionals, I often see them say, oh, I want to get involved, but I'm not sure how, or I'm not sure where to start. And so that was the second time that we've brought about 100 organizations that are looking to engage with young professionals as volunteers or as board members to really give them an opportunity, you know, all in one night under one roof. There's no better opportunity to meet that many different organizations and ways to get involved. So I'd encourage you to get on the RIP or the Rock City Coalition mailing list to hear about, you know, the third annual. But also, you know, I'd encourage groups to reach out to young professionals that they are trying to connect with. And I think the easy one is always, you know, we were talking about this for, you know, people that have social media savvy and those sorts of things. And I think that our generation certainly does. But give them opportunities for leadership roles as well, whether on not just as a volunteer, but maybe on a committee or on a board, you know, where we are interested in stepping up to the plate if given the opportunity. So really find ways to give them valuable ways to find leadership roles.
Mm-hmm. We are definitely looking for that at CURE. But what I would say too is, you know, I think it's absolutely critical, especially with the technology and the millennials are extremely well-versed in social media, that there's a lot of value add that you can do that, okay, maybe you don't have to spend time on mailers and stuff like that if we're using Instagram, if we're using Twitter and stuff like that. And they have excellent ideas where you can get the word out very, very quickly with very little effort. So,
in our last few minutes, I'd like to read an email from a listener named Sierra. Her name's Sierra Johnson, and she and her family have started an organization to honor her brother who took his own life. And now her family is dedicated to trying to curb suicide in the community. So here's an email from Sierra. She says, "Growing up, my parents stressed the importance of giving back to our community. We were always involved in our community. I've been volunteering since I was 10 years old. Over the years, I've been a part of numerous after-school programs, community events, and volunteering programs. Most recently, I've been a part of I Am Isaiah, a nonprofit started after the death of my brother, Isaiah Johnson. We work to spread the awareness about suicide and mental illness. We are currently putting together a Christmas toy drive where we request a wish list from families to ensure that no kid is left without a gift on Christmas morning. We do this by getting a lot of donations, we use fundraising, and we adopt families from the quote-unquote Tree of Hope to get the things that the kids wish for. On December 23rd, we will have a winter Wonderland party to invite all of the kids and their families out to enjoy dinner, play, do crafts, and of course, meet with Santa." And she says, "Being a part of something like this helps me show other people that the world is so much bigger than ourselves. If we can come together as a community and do great things, we will continue to be stronger as a whole. I value volunteering deeply because sometimes as a young adult, I find myself complaining about the things I also tend to take for granted. Giving back to my community reminds me that I should be grateful for all the things I have, big and small. I like to say it takes 30 seconds to show someone that they matter, that you care, and that they are valued. It also takes 30 seconds to save a life. Be kind to people. You never know their story or the things that they are battling." And you can learn more about I Am Isaiah, that nonprofit started in honor of her brother, Isaiah Johnson. You can go to www.iamisaiah.org, and it's I-S-I-A-H. So that's from Sierra. And we're seeing a lot of those organizations pop up in the community. We had a show recently on sibling survivors of suicide loss, and an organization called Meg's Gift, which was started after the family of a young woman lost her to suicide. Do you deal with some of these organizations in your work, Jonathan, some of these more grassroots types organizations?
Yeah, definitely. So the Community Foundation's a wonderful place for a lot of reasons, and one of them is that we cover 8 counties, and so we have a lot of various size organizations contact us regarding, you know, grants and funding, and so yeah, we work with a lot of these organizations.
Mm-hmm. And CURE was started by families who lost their children to cancer. Sean, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So CURE was founded in 1976 by a group of parents that were, you know, their children were diagnosed and ultimately lost their lives to cancer, and there really wasn't any type of safety net, nobody to kind of lean on at the time. So they didn't want to have any parents after them kind of go through the same things that they shared. So they band together and they formed this organization, and you know, we our goal is to continue to grow it.
Where can people learn more?
What was that?
Where can people learn more about CURE?
People can learn more about CURE at curekidscancer.com.
Great. Andrew, where can people find out more about the Rochester Young Professionals and volunteering?
R-Y-P.org. We've got a newsletter that comes out every Monday, and we try to have at least one volunteering opportunity a month. And we also, if anyone sends to marketing@R-Y-P.org, we're happy to put any of your community events and volunteer opportunities up on our website as well.
Great. Jonathan, where can we learn more about the Rochester Area Community Foundation?
You can go to www.racf.org.
And Caroline Butler, if you're a U of R alum, where can you learn more?
www.rochester.edu.
Perfect. I'd like to thank all my guests for joining me today, Andrew Brady, Caroline Butler, Jonathan Hoos, and Sean O'Brien. And thanks to all the listeners who tweeted where they volunteer. If you want to see some of those, you can check out my Twitter feed at MMAC Media. And thanks to all the listeners who called in. More Connections is next.